Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about one of my most passionate topics. I have a few of them, actually, which is social anxiety. And the reason why this is so passionate is because it's a disorder that I've had my entire life. And I'm raising three kids with social anxiety. They all have lots of other things going on. But social anxiety is definitely a family affair at my house. And I was excited to meet Dr. Lori Long, who I actually met through the Childhood Collective, which is a great, fantastic website. And they actually have a podcast too, because we were collaborating and I was tapping into their expertise around ADHD when kind of just randomly we started talking and Lori brought up that she has social anxiety. And I was like, ah, me too. You should come on my podcast. Would you feel comfortable coming on my podcast and sharing your experience? And she graciously agreed to do that, which I appreciate because sometimes it's hard to take off our clinical hat, our professional hat, and be vulnerable and share our own stories with our own mental health struggles. But I think those are the most powerful stories to tell because they help normalize these struggles on a deeper level to say, here I am, a therapist. I have all the right tools. I know what to do. I struggle with this too. And I do feel like that's just very normalizing. And I also think hearing other people's lived experience with various mental health issues is a great way to feel empowered, to learn, to feel like you're not alone. So today's episode will be Lori and I discussing our social anxiety. Lori talks about her journey with it and how therapy has helped her. You can check out her website if you are looking for ADHD support. They do ADHD courses. They actually have a podcast, which is fantastic. And you can check out that as well. And let me leave a link. It's thechildhoodcollective.com. So check that out. I also want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy, and they're available in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. And you can schedule your free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That's treatmyocd.com. And I will leave a link in the show notes for that as well. So if you are looking for social anxiety support in particular for yourself or for your child, or you just want to kind of understand it better, I did create an Instagram account separate from my normal one, which my normal one is AT Parenting Survival, where I post reels and tips and support for you for raising a child with anxiety or OCD. My social anxiety Instagram account, which I just created a few months ago, is at Social Anxiety Reality. And I created that because I am wanting to talk about social anxiety in an adult sort of way. I want to talk about social anxiety and help other people, other adults with social anxiety or teens. I am coming out with a memoir on my social anxiety journey, which is going to be released at the end of September. And so I am super excited about that and wanting to do more talks about social anxiety. The memoir, if you are wanting to know more about that, just follow me at Social Anxiety Reality, because that's really the area that I'm going to start talking about the book when it comes out, because it is a memoir. It's not a children's book. I think some teens might find it helpful. But it is part memoir and it's part self-help in that I'm hoping that people will connect the dots for themselves and look at how I did some exposures and how I reframed my thinking, be able to do that for themselves. So follow me at Social Anxiety Reality so that you can hear more about that. I haven't talked about it yet because it's kind of far away at this point, but it's coming. Scary, scary, scary. I'll talk more about that when that happens. But I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Lori Long. It is interesting because she talks about how social anxiety is impacting her, and it's just so different than how it impacts me. And it really speaks on how unique social anxiety can be and how it can manifest differently for each person. And you'll see what I'm talking about as we go into her story. So without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Lori Long. Well, I want to welcome Lori Long to the podcast. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, we're going to talk about my favorite topic, which is social anxiety, because I get it. And I know you get it on a very real level. And I think it's great for people to hear two therapists talk about the struggle and our own experiences. But before we jump into it, can you give people a little background about who you are?
So I am a child psychologist, and I have a background in educational psychology or school psychology, and worked a lot in the schools, and went on to do private practice work where I did therapy with kids for anxiety, lots on the autism spectrum with anxiety and ADHD. And then I now have a private practice in Scottsdale where I just see kids for evaluations for autism, ADHD, anxiety, learning differences. And I also have an online business with two other people. And we do online parenting courses for kids with ADHD to support them. So we've kind of niched in that particular area.
Yeah, you're like the ADHD version of me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You find, you know, after doing therapy for many years, and like I said, I saw a lot of kids with autism and ADHD. That was like the predominant populations. And what I would see was so many kids with autism had access to resources through the state. They had access to behavioral treatments. And what we know from the research is kids with ADHD benefit equally from that, and honestly are impacted, many of them, equally as kids with autism, and their families are just overwhelmed. And we know from the research that parent training is so effective, but so many parents were going to their pediatrician, they get the option of medication and that was it. So I knew that there was such a need out there for parents to get more information. And then COVID hit and that need grew, where it was like, now kids aren't even getting therapy. And there's just, you see it too. Much of the change happens when we educate parents. So
yeah, absolutely. And then you also have a podcast.
Yes, we just started the podcast in the last year, which has been a labor of love. And we just try and give tips and tricks for parenting ADHD.
What's the podcast called?
It's called Shining with ADHD.
Oh, I didn't even realize that was the name of it. Yeah. And yes. I had you guys on my podcast. And so I will leave that link in the show notes for just a talk on ADHD and how to support parents. That's how we met, was just collaborating and, you know, sharing information. But then I was like, we just started to talk and you were talking about your social anxiety. I find anybody with social anxiety, I'm like, what? And then so I asked you if you could come on the podcast to talk about it, which I think is very brave, because it's, I don't know if you feel this way, but when I'm talking about the things that like I am an expert at, you know, I'm using air quotes here. I feel really confident, you know? And so I can talk with that therapist hat on. And then I've obviously like gotten used to it because it's kind of my style to be very personal and organic, but when you shift to like your own stuff, it's harder.
It's way harder. Yeah. Like I'm definitely, it causes me anxiety to talk about my anxiety. So it's good. This is a good, as my therapist would say, a good behavioral experiment for me to come on here and talk about it.
Well, and I think sometimes it helps, you know, to help other people. So when we talk about our own vulnerabilities or our own struggles, and we're helping other people, it can actually be so therapeutic. I have found that too, you know, where.
Absolutely.
So let's just talk about, I think this will really help a lot of parents that listen to this do have social anxiety and or, you know, are raising kids with social anxiety, and getting a window into what that feels like, I think it's really a two-parter. I think it's to help normalize and validate it for those that are struggling, but also to give a little window to parents who are trying to help their kids with social anxiety as well. So when did you start to notice that it was a problem?
I mean, it's been a problem my whole life, probably. And it, you know, again, these things run in families. So it's always been something that on my maternal side of the family, everyone has struggled with. And so when I was growing up, it was always just us joking about how we could never pee in public, or if we'd run into somebody that we knew when we were at a store, we'd hide immediately. Or like, I would joke about how in high school, I basically wear sweats to the pool to like cover my entire body. Like, cause yeah. I was, you know, or just excessive shyness, you know, that I was a really shy kid and I was homeschooled up until high school. For the most part, I went to some kind of smaller schools prior to that. And I guess I kind of always just saw it as, oh, I was homeschooled. And so I didn't have as many social experiences. And so I was just more anxious and shy as a result of that. Right. But it never kind of went away. And I remember in college, I had to do presentations. And I ended up doing an honors thesis where I did research. And I was at like a campus of Ohio State, which was out in the country and was a smaller campus. And I had to go to the main campus, which was huge, and present in front of like all of these other people. And, you know, if I kind of looked at my core fear over my entire life, it was this feeling of incompetence, that I'm incompetent. And I remember giving that presentation and my friend saying, oh my gosh, you were so nervous. Your voice was shaky. And it was painful. Like I felt so anxious. And I remember that's really probably the first time that this anxiety started about people noticing my shaky voice, people noticing that I'm anxious in a performance type of situation. And, you know, again, as I went into grad school, I remember like, it's not like it's normal for people to have performance anxiety giving a presentation. Like, what is it, like 60 or 70% of people have anxiety over it. But it's not normal to like 6 months in advance of giving a presentation start to have like horrible anxiety about it, right? Where like, I remember looking at my syllabus in grad school, like, you know, many months prior to it starting and freaking out about having to give a presentation at the end of that semester.
Yeah, I could totally get that. Yeah.
Yes. And as I continued, I had to teach. So I ended up getting thrown into a role that was really random. I got a research assistantship through ASU doing technology stuff and ended up being in a role where I had to do trainings like in positive behavior supports for school staff, and ended up being the director for the ASU department because the other person was on maternity leave. And so I'm now thrown into a role where I have to give presentations in front of like faculty who are at other, you know, and then I'm having to teach undergraduate classes. I remember the first class I taught was in, you know, teaching high school teachers about educational psychology and motivation and learning. And there were nights I didn't sleep at all, like prior to having to teach. My stomach was a mess. Like I would focus on the one kid in class that was like sleeping. It was like the most stressful. And I remember at the end of that, my director who was overseeing and supervising my teaching was like, I've never seen such high ratings from students on your teaching. They loved you. I've never seen students connect in this way from a first-time teacher. And I remember at that moment thinking, oh my gosh, like I have such a vast difference between like what people are seeing versus what I'm perceiving of myself.
Social anxiety is that often our perception of how we look or the story that we tell ourselves about how we look is just often inconsistent with how other people see us.
Yes. And so I continued to teach and my anxiety went down. Like giving presentations wasn't a big deal. Teaching wasn't a big deal. I taught grad level classes. And then again, when I got pregnant, I had to go to this very intense IEP meeting. So I go to IEP meetings all the time and there are lawyers at them and they're very stressful meetings where I'm presenting results and having to really argue with the team, which is really hard, to say, I think this girl has autism, for instance. And in this particular case, I was 7 weeks pregnant. I had a history from my other pregnancy where I just vomited constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had the worst pregnancies, and they wouldn't give me Zofran because Zofran was reclassified as this like more, you know, concerning medication, even though I took it with my other pregnancy. And so they were like, no, you have to go through all these other medications before we can give it to you. And so I'm going into this meeting thinking I'm going to vomit, like, and like a legitimate fear, because I was like vomiting every afternoon.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking I'm going to vomit at this meeting. I was so stressed. I start talking and all of a sudden I'm just like, I have an anxiety attack at this meeting in front of like 20 different people.
That's
and
rough.
it was rough. And I had to apologize and I gathered myself together and I went through the meeting and I was effective when we got her eligibility changed. But all I remember from that meeting was how incompetent I was. I didn't charge the mom, even though it was like 3 hours of my time and I drove 30 minutes to go to this meeting. I'm incompetent. What if my bosses find out how terrible I did? This mom must think I'm an idiot. Like, it was just such negative. And that's where it started to really grow. And it started to really grow then because I started to engage in avoidance. So anytime there was an opportunity to do an IEP meeting, I was like, no, I can't do it. And I'd avoid. Or I went to the doctor and I was like, I'm getting presentation anxiety, even though I hadn't had it for years. And I'm getting propranolol to take for these meetings, which again, I'm avoiding. I can't cope. I need this medication. And then I started my private practice and it would come and go in waves where I'd have it and I'd get over it and I'd be okay. Then we launched the Childhood Collective. And it was this dream of mine to do these online courses, but it was literally my worst nightmare to get in front of a video and be talking in front of people. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. But I also know, you know what? I've done hard things before. I've taught, I've been through this, like I can do this. The day we launched the Childhood Collective, I went to a networking meeting and I got anxious because I'm feeling like, I'm not as good as these other people. It's in the business world, they call it imposter syndrome, right? Where like, I'm an imposter that I can specialize in ADHD when there's all these other people who specialize in it, right? And I all of a sudden got anxious and had an anxiety attack talking to one of my old supervisors. And he's like, your voice is shaky. Like, are you okay? Are you anxious?
That makes it even worse when I think people like point it out. Like, they're like,
yes.
Just pretend I'm okay. Can we just like not acknowledge?
Exactly. And it just grew from there. And then I started avoiding, I started taking propranolol for, you know, meetings that I had with parents. And then a couple months later, I was going over results with a family to tell them their child had autism and just had an anxiety attack, like shaking voice, nervous. And again, in my mind, it was the worst thing that could ever happen. I had to leave I had to walk out and take some deep breaths. And I came back, went through the meeting. And that's when I was like, I was dreading going to work. My anxiety was horrible all through the day. That's all I could think about. I couldn't function. My mind was worrying about the next meeting I was going to have, that it was going to happen again at work. And I just, again, I didn't know what to do. I was like in a really bad place. And that's when I finally called a therapist and I was like, I need you to get me in like ASAP.
Cause it almost feels like, I mean, for me, it sounds like maybe for you too, like you have a bad experience and that just like kind of validates all your fears.
Yes.
And then it makes the next time even scarier. And so it's this vicious cycle that can grow really quickly out of control.
Yes. And it grew quickly. And it was, you know, like, I don't think I had ever in my life experienced like what an anxiety disorder feels like, where it's like, you can't think about anything else all day long. And I remember going into my doctor and she was wanting to put me on Lexapro And I was like, but I don't, it's like this very specific anxiety. Like it's really just about presenting, right? And she's like, yeah, but you're worrying about it all day long, every day.
Right.
Right. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. And I remember like doing some research and kind of looking at, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but looking at social anxiety treatment, and it's equally as effective to either take medication or do therapy, but not like, it's not better to do both. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So I was kind of like, you know what? I know what's going on in me. Like, I know I'm like, at least I'm a psychologist. I know this is social anxiety. I know that I need treatment either way. Mm-hmm. So I decided to like go all in with therapy. And that was in February of 2020. So you know what happened the next month. COVID hit.
Yeah. And then everything became, well, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad, I mean, COVID, obviously a bad thing, but like, and I was talking about this on my social anxiety Instagram account. I was talking about how like COVID kind of made this little haven for social anxiety in some ways, because we didn't have to go out. We didn't have to do these things. But then someone made a comment, which I actually thought was pretty interesting, where they're like, made it worse for me because I had to do all these Zoom meetings. And Zoom was like overwhelming for them. And I do remember Zoom meetings being overwhelming for me, like when I first went on Zoom, but it was before COVID.
Yeah.
So when COVID hit, then do you do virtual therapy?
Yeah. So I think we all went to Zoom a lot. And my therapist, it was like a really long drive to go see her because there's like not very many people again that specialize in social anxiety. So it was a long drive and I have two young kids and it was kind of craziness. So I ended up doing my therapy, a lot of it over Zoom at that point, which was more convenient for me. But it made it trickier for me to treat it. Because for me doing a Zoom meeting was sort of a layer of protection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of safetiness to it where people can't see my voice as much and hear me. Yeah. And there's a little bit of a space. So I actually feel like it probably, like I would have probably been able to treat it more quickly had that not happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same. It's interesting because social anxiety, I think people don't realize that social anxiety it can look so different in each person.
Yes.
And a lot of times I think people think social anxiety is just shyness or it's just a lack of social skills. And really it's the fear of judgment and criticism. I mean, if you had to summarize social anxiety, it's the fear of judgment and criticism. My social anxiety is totally opposite of yours. It's like fascinating. Cause I mean, we've never talked about it. I just said, let's come on the podcast. We'll just talk about it on the podcast. So I've never heard your story before, but mine is completely opposite. I mean, I've got the FOMO, like the fear of, you know, I've got imposter syndrome. I think everybody has a flavor of that, but mine is all social. Like if I'm in my professional realm, that's kind of when I started started this episode, I was saying this, like if I'm in my professional realm, I feel confident because I feel like I have something to say to teach you. But if you put me in a party, I will be so in my head and I'll feel overwhelmed. I won't be able to last, you know, like that's my nightmare and I'll avoid that. Like, if someone's like, hey, you know, come out into this group of friends where I'm like, I'd rather die. It's like,
well, and I would say I definitely had that also. And I think that got better, I think, with age, where those things just didn't bother me as much. But when my performance anxiety got really bad, I had anxiety just having a conversation with friends, like close friends, which was weird. But yeah, I mean, I definitely experienced that as well.
Yeah, that is my number one. And then my kids all have social anxiety. All three of them actually do. And and it's just so highly genetic, but it's weird because you were saying when you grew up, like everybody seemed to have it and they kind of helped normalize it.
Yes.
No one in my family had social anxiety. They had mental health issues. And so there's that genetic component there, but it didn't manifest in social anxiety. So I was always kind of the oddball. Where it was like, why is she throwing up before school? And I remember in college, because I had an eighth grade teacher who made us read, and my social anxiety clung onto it. And it was like, I am incompetent, kind of similar theme.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to mispronounce a word and people are going to really figure out that I'm stupid.
Yep.
And so from eighth grade on, if I knew I had to read, and I would think about it 24/7, like, is this a situation where I'm gonna have to read out loud, which is so bizarre.
Yes. Yep.
But you know, there'd be more times than not where there would be a situation. And in college, I dropped classes because there were professors that would make you read. And I'd be like, I can't stay in this class because I can't read. And so I totally get that, where it's like a very specific thing. But then, and even when I went online and I would be like doing a Zoom call or something, and I have to read the comments or like read them out loud. Initially, that was really overwhelming to me because I was like, what if I stumble on a word and people are going to think I'm an idiot? Now I embrace that. And when I did my podcast, people would email me and would say, you mispronounced this word, or you said this wrong, or this is how you pronounce it. And it, like, it would be really triggering for my social anxiety, where I'd be like, I got angry and I was like, what kind of person takes their time? I was like, okay, that's a them problem, not a me problem. So now if I mispronounce something, I kind of make fun of myself in the podcast. It's actually been kind of therapeutic. But I get a lot of what you're saying. So can you talk about what the therapy looked like and how it helped?
You know, at first it was really kind of managing the feelings in a moment because I just was like, I don't know what to do. Like, because I'm literally having anxiety attacks. And there were times when I'd almost like disassociate the anxiety. It was so high where it felt like I was just like watching myself, where I would almost panic that much. And it's so crazy to like talk about it now because I think like it seems so silly, right? But in the moment, like the anxiety is so overwhelming. It just feels like I can't cope with this. And so my therapist really, the first few sessions was one helping me understand like what was happening in my body and knowing like why it was happening, which was helpful. And then also understanding what to do about it, and helping me understand when I'm doing those talks, I'm hyper focusing on my internal symptoms, and I'm not thinking about what my role is in this situation, and my role and who I am is to like impart this knowledge to a parent. That's what I'm there for. They're there to hear that. And I need to focus on that role. And so part of it was having like doing practices, even like not in therapy, but in therapy as well, of like refocusing my attention on the other person. Because what was happening is I was focusing all of my attention 100% on every physical symptom in my body and worrying about it instead of focusing my attention on the other person. So that was honestly like a really helpful practice. But when your anxiety is like at a 10, it's really hard to do
It is. It is.
It is really hard to refocus your attention. So that was one thing. And it's funny because we just had you on the podcast and on our Shining with ADHD podcast to talk about OCD, and you talked a lot about finding the wrong therapist. And I remember just going to a general therapist, and there, and again, she's like a lovely person and she does great work, but she did not understand that I had social anxiety. And I went to her because a friend went to her, and her advice to me was, when you have that anxiety, like think about it. Think about where it's happening in your body, right? And she was telling me to focus my attention on my body, and that actually like had like a triggering effect,
I
right?
totally. Because when I sometimes think that's more of an ACT approach, acceptance commitment therapy approach, of focusing on the inner. And I think for a lot of us with social anxiety, that doesn't help. I know, even like deep breathing, when I was 19, I started to have panic attacks. And you know, and that go-to of like deep breathing was such a triggering thing for me because I was already hyper-focusing on my breathing and my heart and my mouth, that it didn't help me. Like, I needed to get out of my body and focus on what's happening in my environment. So it's interesting.
Yeah, so that was kind of where we started. And she really then kind of, I think that there's, when you're talking about social anxiety treatment, there's like a strong cognitive component to that, where like you really do have to do some like restructuring of thoughts. And there was a lot of work where we went back even into my childhood of like, where did these feelings of incompetence come from? And like I said, like this runs in my family. So like what was modeled to me from like my mom, and my mom is like the greatest person ever. I don't ever want to be like, this is my mom's fault. And like, I hate it when people complain about their parents. And my mom did the best that she could. And she has social anxiety that never went treated. But like, she modeled a lot of, I'm stupid. Like there was a lot of, I'm stupid and I'm not smart and I'm a math teacher, but like I was terrible at math. And that's why I'm so good at like teaching now, is because like, it didn't make sense to me. But a lot of I'm fat, I'm stupid, I'm ugly, like those types of comments where it's like, well, if my mom thinks she's stupid, then I must be stupid because she seems really smart to me. And again, like I, you know, I love ADHD and I do a lot of stuff with ADHD because that runs in my family. And I do, you know, it's not something I talk about on our account, but I do question like, and have questioned for many years that I had inattentive ADHD that went undiagnosed. My nickname as a kid was Space Cadet Lori, because I just zoned out all the time and like was daydreaming and all that. And that's like, if I look back and think about how these things kind of grew, right? Like some of those things were there. Some of them were genetic. And I remember just being kind of a dumb, like people kind of saw me as a dumb ditzy blonde that was kind of spacey. And that was sort of like this identity that I kind of grew up with. So there was a lot of going back into like how these things grew and restructuring kind of how I thought about myself, and even going back into the memory of my IEP meeting. And after kind of going through that and re-looking at it and thinking about it differently, like I literally don't see that memory in the same way that I did previously before therapy. Like she helped me to like go back and kind of re-look at that and rethink about that in a different way. That feeling of incompetence isn't there anymore. Like it just really isn't there. Like it was so intense before.
I think those are powerful tools. I think there is so much cognitive restructuring that comes with social anxiety. I feel like there are stories that we tell ourselves that have to be rewritten. And I do love how you went back into situations and saw it from a different perspective.
It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, you know, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding or touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures before. It was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Before there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it. And I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com.
I never had had social anxiety treatment. I didn't even realize I had social anxiety until I started to do an online platform. And I was like, this, and it was kind of similar to you, like where there was that trigger point where I was like overwhelmed and didn't know why, and like realized it wasn't normal to like throw up before you have to like do a Facebook Live.
You know, like, yes.
I was like, what's going on? Like physically shaking. And like I realized, okay, like I've had social anxiety my whole life. And just, I actually thought that I just repelled people. And I thought that that was more of like, wow, a, you know, that I just, you know, I didn't have something that other people had, and not realizing that a lot of it was a story that I was telling myself.
But I love that.
Go on.
I felt the same way. And I remember when I was starting my private practice, I was trying to decide, do I want to do treatment? Do I want to focus on assessments? And I was like, I'm going to take this. I took this cognitive behavioral therapy course from the Beck Institute. If there are any therapists out there, like their courses are phenomenal, which is in part why I started thinking about doing that for ADHD, because they were so helpful. And one of the kind of weeks was working on social anxiety. And I remember like listening to all of it and thinking, that was like really the first time where I was like, oh my gosh, that's me to a T. Like they just described me. And even using some of those strategies for myself at that time. And that was really the first time where I like it clicked that, oh my, this is all the stuff that I've struggled with for a long time. And then when things started to get bad, my husband had been reading a book called How to Be Yourself by Ellen Hendrickson. And if any of you have social anxiety and you're listening, it is a hilarious book and extremely helpful. And I found like the tools were really helpful. It did not replace therapy though. Like I couldn't have read that book and been like, okay, I'm good. I definitely needed therapy at that time. But it was very comforting to read all the different stories about things that people went through, and also the hope that these things can change. And also understand too, like when I was doing therapy, like why it's helpful and the why behind a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to read that. I haven't read it yet, but it sounds really good. So I wonder what suggestions you'd have for parents who are raising kids or teens or young adults with social anxiety, as far as like what would help or how to approach them and support them.
I mean, I think you probably talk a lot about this, but I think many families that I work with that have kids with social anxiety are kind of accommodating them a lot. So I just had a little girl in recently, and you know, her mom and dad were talking about like how they would go out to a restaurant and she would not order, like, so they would have to order for her, or if she was like purchasing something out in public, like they were kind of accommodating that and instead of asking her to do that. Again, I think it's hard because it's, you know, if you stop those accommodations, sometimes it is like too much for certain kids to be able to do that. Like their anxiety is so high, they're just not capable of it. And that's where therapy is helpful to get to them, to get them to a point where they can do those things and feel successful at it. So, but I do see a lot of parents who are just kind of doing those things for their kids because they think that they're helping, but it's actually kind of making some of those symptoms a little bit worse.
Yeah. And some people might have had, like, I know in my family, you know, I didn't have a sympathetic mom, and I had a very she was a very outgoing, charismatic person, and she would just push me to do things, you know? And so without the empathy or without the coaching, it would just be like, get out of the car, you know, or just say something to her, you know? And so it was more like, you're an idiot. Why aren't you doing this? And I know with my own kids, it is kind of, it can feel the same. And I've worked with, I've talked to a lot of parents in my community who feel uncomfortable pulling back or trying to empower their kids to do things themselves because they feel like, well, that's what happened to me. And it felt cruel and it felt horrible. And there is a difference. You know, I know
there is.
Talk about ordering. My son has a hard time with ordering. All three of my kids are different. Like,
yes, I understand that mine are different too.
Yep. It's so weird. And my youngest is like, I know. She's like, she loves people. She's an extrovert. Like, we look completely different. And yet she still has social anxiety. It manifests differently. Mm-hmm. It's generally around emetophobia, but the core fear is if I throw up in front of people, they're going to not like me, which it all kind of comes back down to, like, you're not going to like me, fear of rejection. So it has the same flavor. But I know with my son, he won't want to order. And we'll talk about it sometimes beforehand, where we're going to go in here. And if you can order, you know, you can earn 2 points and we have a currency going on, you know, some behavior modification. And there are times where he's had a long day. It's a rough day. And I can tell, like, he's a deer caught in headlights and it's not going to happen. And he just wants takeout.
Yes.
I'll order it. That actually happened the other day where I was like, okay, it's just a bridge too far right now. For the most part, being aware and assessing that, and but letting them know, like, if I always order for you, then what's going to happen when you're an adult? Or if I always go with you and sit at the party with you, what's going to happen? And it's, you know, not pulling that band-aid off, but like, can I sit in the parking lot first, you know, or then can I go to a coffee shop, you know, like slowly pull back those crutches that wind up immobilizing kids.
Yeah. And I think, again, it's, that's where like the education for kids is so important, because if somebody had told me like, hey, this is a thing, like when you were younger, if somebody had said, this is a thing and like lots of people have it and this is what's happening in your body and it's not a big deal, but like, I'm going to help you. And this is why it's happening. And this is how we can make it better. It's very different than just being like, okay, you need to order yourself. Right. Or not even getting a heads up on it and just like, okay, like it's on you now to do this thing. But yeah, I think, it, you know, the main part of my treatment that was the most effective, we know this is true, is like doing those behavioral experiments or exposures, where part of it too is really trying to identify what is the thing that you're afraid of. And for me, it really was like, I hyper-focused on my voice. That was the thing that I was really worried about, was my voice shaking. And so it was a lot of not just having to perform in someone in front of other people, but actually make my voice shake in front of other people, which was like a very scary thing to do. I know. But it wasn't until I did that, like I systematically did that and worked with my therapist on what are my predictions when this happens? Like, what do I predict this person is going to do or how they're going to respond or react? And then kind of experimented afterwards with like, you know, or looked at afterwards, like what actually happened and like, and talking about that and processing it with her. I went through this kind of relearning experience that it's not a big deal. Like it just isn't a big deal. And it took a lot of those practices. And even like, she would set up all kinds of different situations. Like she had all her social anxiety, like therapist friends from like all over who, you know, I had to give webinars and sell products in front of, and they like gave me critical feedback or they were really hard. She had me pretend, you know, I know she had me do a meeting with another therapist friend who acted like a parent that I had to give results to and like got angry at me. And part of it was that learning experience of, oh wow, like I thought I couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
And I can. And one of the things that I really learned was when I'm feeling anxious, I can still be effective.
Yeah.
Like I can still communicate what needs to be communicated. And I can still be effective even when I'm anxious, because the anxiety isn't going away. Like that's going to be there.
Right.
And not being afraid of it anymore and realizing like I can cope with that. And that's really like what we want our kids to realize is like, we don't want to take away that anxiety for them. Like we talk about that with parents all the time. Like we're not, your job isn't to like eliminate anxiety. It's your job is to help them realize that they can cope with it.
Right. Yeah. And that is a good distinction, because we can't physiologically take away anxiety. It's an automatic response. And the hope is that, you know, through a lot of exposures and doing some work that you won't feel it as intensely, but the ultimate goal is to learn how to sit with that discomfort.
Yeah.
And I know it's interesting when you talk about these behavioral experiments, because I didn't have a therapist, but I started to do hierarchies myself and I started to set up exposures. Cause I mean, I felt like I knew exactly what I needed to do and I knew how to do it. My worst case scenarios would come true. I would do exposures and for me, it was like, so I remember I signed up for a training where I'd have to go to another state. And normally my husband would go with me because he was totally my like cushion. And I was like, no, I'll go by myself. And I didn't feel comfortable driving and finding out, like I had all these, you know, social anxiety layers. So that was hard enough, like just going to like the training, but then they had the happy hour, which is like,
oh my gosh,
nightmare. Cause I can sit there and be like, okay, I'm just here from out of state at this training. It's okay. It's uncomfortable to sit by myself, but you know, it kind of makes sense in the context. But then the happy hour and that little nagging voice was like, you have to go to that. Like, that's why we're here. Like, that's exactly what, you know, the non-structured, and it was horrible. I mean, it was a bad experience, you know, and normally when I put myself in social situations where I don't know anyone, it is a bad experience. Everything that I'm worried about does come true. No one comes up and talks to me. I sit awkwardly. I don't know how long I can stay. I have to sit with that discomfort. But I think the goal and what I realized through my own weird journey is that I will always feel uncomfortable in non-structured social activities, but that I can get through it. You know, that I can handle sitting there. I can handle doing that and I can survive. And I think sometimes we think the anticipation is we're going to get rid of the anxiety or it's going to go swimmingly. We're going to prove our social anxiety wrong. And I try to tell people the goal isn't to prove social anxiety wrong per se. The goal is to say, even if the worst case scenario happens to you, which for me, it like actually probably will happen because I don't do anything to help myself, that I can get through it and it will be okay.
Yeah. And I do, I mean, again, like I relate to you, and if I have to go, you know, I went to like this big group thing for my kids ice skating and I didn't know anyone. And part of it is when you see your kids with the same struggles. Like my daughter, my oldest, has always struggled with like initiating or interacting with other kids. And I go to it and my oldest has gotten so much better about it where she joined the other kids. But my youngest was like clinging to me, wouldn't talk, wouldn't go near the other kids. And she's like a really social kid. And I realized like I have to model something different. Like I have to model like doing this thing that's like I'm uncomfortable with, that I assume like these moms are going to think I'm weird or whatever. And I remember walking up to a mom and just like introducing myself, like there was a group of moms and I just walked up and introduced myself and like joined it. And I would never do like that, is just not a thing I would do. At the same time, I'm like, I have to model to my kids that I can do this, like, cause I want them to do that. And if I want her to do that, I have to do it. And it's honestly, having kids with social anxiety has like really opened my eyes to, I have to do this for them, not just me.
Yeah. And it's a good point. Well, that's very brave. I don't think I would have done that.
I didn't want to.
Modeled going. That's where I could have modeled. I can go to this. You know, and I feel like, you know, social anxiety is a journey. I don't think it's anything you get over. It's like, you learn to dance with it. And I know for me, you know, when I wrote a memoir, it's coming out in September, and like in the book was actually very therapeutic. Cause you were talking about going back to your younger self, like the book goes and it bounces back to like me doing therapy with my younger versions of myself and talking about how I perceived it was actually maybe not accurate, you know, and you know, the skewed perspective, which that was therapy in and itself, actually writing this book.
Yeah.
But I forgot where I was going with that. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Recently, I find that I get frustrated when my social anxiety spikes really high again. Like it should be gone by now. You know, like I've done all these things, you know, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, why does this bother me? Or why do I care? Because like, you know, my ultimate goal is to be like, if people don't accept me, it doesn't matter. And I think part of me is trying to accept that I am a quiet, introverted person. Except when I'm not, when I have a lot of energy and I just vibe with somebody, and that it's okay to sit by myself in a group. It's okay to go to like one of my kids' school events and sit in the cafeteria and not know anyone and not feel awkward or have to look at my phone and act like I'm busy or go to the bathroom because I don't want to sit there by myself. But part of my new journey is just accepting that this is a part of me, and that beating up process of why does it still bother me is not helpful. And that it's going to be a journey. It's a daily practice, and that these things can be hard, and that's okay. We do the things that are still important to us because they do matter, and our kids are watching, and that kind of drives it.
Yeah. And I think I spaced. Sorry. I know, I can't think. I remember my therapist saying, like, if that happens to you, just say, like, I'm having a senior moment.
I find that really helpful. Like, that's why I do my podcast. When I mispronounce something or I'm like, or my dog barks, I'm just like, you know, to be human, I think is actually, it like disarms social anxiety. Because when you put it out there and you're just like, yeah, I don't remember your name or, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Power.
Yeah, and I remember, like, you know, while this was going on, I talked about it on our stories and things on Instagram, through our Instagram. And I wrote a blog post that was about like my journey and like the first half of my social anxiety journey. And I never wrote the second half because I was like waiting to be like, oh, when I've like totally crushed my social anxiety, right?
Yeah.
And I never ended up writing the second part of it because I felt like, oh my gosh, like I'm not there yet, right? And I had some people who like read it later and they're like, where's this part two of that? So this, I figured this podcast would be my part two to talk about like what my treatment looked like. But yeah, I mean, I think again, it's like this, it's a false reality to think like, oh, it's just gonna, I'm gonna eliminate it. And that's never the goal. Then the goal is never to just be like, oh, I don't have social anxiety anymore. Like I have social anxiety. It is a part of who I am, but it doesn't dictate my life anymore. Yeah. And it doesn't run my life. And I don't feel like an incompetent person anymore. Like that core fear, like really isn't a core fear that has a hold on my life anymore. And that's the important part. Are there situations where like something will happen and all of a sudden like my anxiety, like I have an anxiety attack almost in the moment? Yes. Like it'll come out of nowhere. And that will happen. But the good news is that I know what's happening in my body. And I also know like I can cope with it. I remember my therapist saying like, you'll know when you're like kind of ready is that you'll have an attitude of like, bring it. Like you'll be talking to your anxiety and you'll be like, bring it.
Because yeah.
Like, and I'm not like, honestly, if I'm being truly honest, like I'm not there yet. And yeah. There are times when I can see it start to creep back in and I will literally go right back to my experiments where I'm like, okay. And my daughter and I talk about this because she has to do her exposures too. Mm-hmm. And we'll do them together. I'll be like, okay, well, when I do my meeting today, I'm going to make my voice shake. And it is like terrifying for me to do, but I'm going to do it because she's doing hard things too. And we can both do them together. So it's honestly, it's really hard being someone with anxiety who has kids with anxiety, but I think we can also like really understand our kids at a whole nother level that other people can't and help them cope with that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I feel like it becomes a family, it's like a family culture. It's a family way of life. I mean, Mike, we talk about anxiety and OCD on a daily basis and I'm part of that discussion. Or my kids will call me out. You know, I'll say, oh, your pants look a little too short. Why don't you go back and change? And they'll be like, Mom, is that your social anxiety? Like, I'm 12. I can decide what I'm going to wear, you know, and it's not a reflection of you. They'll say it in a kid way, but, you know, it's because they know that, you know, I'm being triggered. So I do feel like we could empower each other, do exposures together. I think that's all really helpful.
Yeah. I mean, my oldest, who's kind of gone through therapy, will talk to my youngest and be like, that's your worry, bully. You need to order. And again, one of my kids, like she just this morning, like performed an entire poem that was like multiple pages long in front of like the headmaster of her school and all these like adults and did amazing. And that would like been wholly terrifying to me. Whereas my youngest, like she doing performance stuff is like really much harder for her. So like they do have different kinds of anxieties and they do kind of help each other. And we talk about like their worry bullies, your worry bullies telling you can't do that. And what are you going to say back to them?
Yeah, I love that. I think it's great when there's language and the whole family is like cheerleading each other on.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your story. I think that's so helpful. I just think people... For parents and just people in general to hear two therapists who support others who also have their own struggles, it can just be very like humanizing and validating to hear the journey that people are on. On a separate side note, where can people find your website if they're interested in ADHD resources, which I'm sure they are?
Yeah, so they can find our resources at thechildhoodcollective.com. We have some free guides and our courses. We have printable visual schedules to help with like morning and evening routines. And then we're primarily on Instagram at the Childhood Collective, although we have other, you know, Facebook and TikTok and those types of things. We spend the most time, I would say, on Instagram and have lots of resources there. Make sure to check us out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I know this was a weird ask for me to ask you to do this, and I appreciate you doing it.
No, it's therapeutic.
Yeah, so you can check that off. Tell a therapist that you just did something really awkward.
Yes.
All right. Well, take care.
You too.
Well, I hope you found that helpful. I think it's always fascinating to hear other people's stories. I always learn things about the struggle or about how it impacts other people when I hear other people's experiences. Follow her work. She does fantastic work, her and her crew at the Childhood Collective. There is three of them, and they're all really fantastic. It's Lori, Katie, and Mallory, and they bring their expertise to talk about ADHD, and so how to give you those skills. So you can check out their website, their podcast, and don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Social Anxiety Reality if you're looking for more social anxiety support, because I am actually doing a reel every other day in there, trying to normalize social anxiety and trying to give some support. And so I would love to see you over there so that I can offer you that. And you'll find out more information about my memoir, Coming Out of the Shell. Actually, it's Out of My Shell. I have never said that out loud yet. I haven't said my title yet. Out of My Shell, Overcoming Social Anxiety from Childhood to Adulthood. You can actually find it on Amazon if you type Out of My Shell, Overcoming Social Anxiety from Childhood. You can actually pre-order it already. Isn't that kind of crazy? It's coming out September 19th. So check that out on Amazon. That's pretty crazy and scary and exciting. I hope that you're finding the podcast helpful in general. And if you are, don't forget to rate us. There's not multiple us. It's just me. But rate me on Google Play, Stitcher, Apple, wherever you consume your podcasts. And if you leave a review, I'll probably be reading one of those because I don't think I have a new one as of yet. So I'll probably be reading yours next time. I hope that you find the sparkle in everything you do, and I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.